Yeah, thanks a lot, Dr. Thompson. Our next speaker is Bruce Wark. He's a freelance journalist and retired journalism professor who now lives in Parsborough. He taught the history and ethics of journalism at the University of King's College here in Halifax for 15 years. Before that, he worked for 19 years at CBC Radio News, serving as producer in charge of such network programs as The World at Six, World Report, and The House. He also produced what I thought was a marvelous program, Media File, a national program that looked critically at the performance of the news media. Bruce.
Well, you mentioned Media File, Jim. Just to tell a little story about that. It was supposed to look critically at the news media, and we decided, Richard Starr and I were producing it, we decided we would look just as critically at CBC as at any of the other media, and that's a real no-no. And it was Mike Hornbrook, who is now the economics correspondent for CBC, who did an item for us on Morningside's coverage of the Middle East and its persistent strong bias in favor of Israel. That was when Peter Zosky was host of the program. And I'll tell you, talk about pressure and controversy. I spent 2 or 3 days writing a 10-page memo defending that program from a direct attack on us from the executive producer of Morningside. So that was a kind of, that was not from an outside Jewish organization or from anyone else. It was internal dissent and controversy. And when you go through something like that, you think twice before you engage in something like that again. That was a severe thing. And of course, the program under, when I had it, lasted for 2 years, and then they canceled it, saying that, well, it had run out of topics to cover. I said, well, why don't you cancel the Parliamentary Bureau, because they've covered all the topics too. I'm interested in, I mean, there's no doubt about it, that the mainstream media in Canada are very biased and do tend to silence Palestinian voices and do tend to look at the issue of the conflict between Israel and Palestine very narrowly and also with a strong pro-Israeli bias. I was part of that at CBC. I lived it for 19 years, and it exists. And why is that? That's what I'm interested in. Why does that exist? And how can it exist when journalists say that they are guided by the principles of accuracy, fairness, and balance? And they believe in those principles. Journalists believe in those principles, and I certainly did when I was a journalist. I still do. I think we have to ask some key questions to explore. How do journalists think? What rules and routines do they follow? And what and who are their sources? So I think those are questions to ask about the everyday work routines of journalism that produces this kind of double standard or bias. For instance, we hear a lot about Syria. We hear very little about Bahrain. Although you will hear some things. And when we say that the media are biased, you have to be careful. As a media critic, it's a very hazardous profession. Because as soon as you say that the mainstream Canadian media are always biased against Israel, the CBC or some other news organization will point to a story, such as the one recently that Derek Stoffel did, a very good story, showing how Jewish settlers are stealing crucial sources of water from Palestinians. It's on the website, and it's an amazingly refreshing story that does tell the other side. So that's not what I'm talking about here. There are occasional stories like that. It's the overall repetition of a kind of what I call a frame or framing that sets the pattern for the news that the Canadian public receives day after day, month after month, with the occasional story that tells another kind from another point of view. So I'm going to look at the four F's: framing, format, focus, and flack, because all of these are interrelated and all of them are what produce, I would argue, the bias that we see in the Canadian media. I'm going to read an overall thesis here. Journalists say they follow professional standards such as fairness, accuracy, and balance. But these standards conceal the fact that most news is rooted in propaganda. In fact, the great writer on propaganda, Jacques Ellul, suggests that news itself is propaganda. These standards also conceal the fact that the everyday routines of gathering and reporting news reinforce the power of the privileged elites who produce that propaganda. So if we think of the news system as a propaganda system that reinforces the propaganda of privileged elites, we begin to start to see that in a country where official Canadian government policy of long standing for years and decades has always been strongly pro-Israel. And this sets the tone, the propaganda from government and from the elites and corporate elites sets the tone for the context in which this reporting takes place. Now, I go into this in more detail on my website, which is mediaspin.ca, and I did a study of CBC's coverage of Ipperwash, the shooting of Dudley George, over a 10-year period. And I think it's relevant here in two senses. One, it shows how everyday work routines of journalists, the invocation of fairness, balance, and accuracy, produces a kind of biased and skewed result that tends to portray the natives at Ipperwash as outlaws, as people who are somewhat illegitimate. It's subtle, but it's there. And so if you read that paper, you'll see in more depth what I'm talking about tonight. Richard Erickson, who wrote three books on the Canadian media, the late Richard Erickson, he was a criminologist, says, "The very act of discovering and construing events in journalistic terms blinds journalists and their audiences to other ways of seeing." So the very fact that I'm going to do a report, say, on this discussion tonight, the fact that I'm packaging it as a story, as a journalistic story, may, to the extent that I'm skillful enough at doing the storytelling routines, blind the audience to the fact that there are other ways, other points of view of seeing things. The result is not the whole truth, but truth reduced to the format capacities of the newspaper article or broadcast news item. So that kind of sets up my discussion here of framing, format, focus, and flack, and they're all interrelated. Framing is used to define and construct a political issue or public controversy. I like to think of it literally as a frame. The journalist draws a frame around controversy or around public events, and then the frame helps to decide what we put in to the story and what we leave out. So one common frame, not always stated explicitly, but it's there. Israel as a beleaguered liberal democracy just like us, surrounded by implacable enemies. This is the David versus Goliath frame. And even though that may not be true, it may be that Israel is powerful and its so-called enemies are weak, Still, the frame sees it the opposite way. It's a story. The David Goliath story shows how David, the weaker one, triumphs over Goliath, who is a brute. And the brutal Arab states and Iran surrounding Israel threaten its existence, and the beleaguered state, it justifies a lot of its actions in defending itself. So Israel is defending itself. That is a common frame in the Canadian media. There is another set of frames that have to do with violence. And here I rely on a book. I wish I had written the title down, but I can later. This book is the single best book I have ever read on these issues of the way media cover international events. It's called Islamic Peril, Media and Global Violence by Karim H. Karim, who is the former director of the Journalism and Communication School at Carleton University. He now teaches in London, England. And it's a marvelous book, published in 2000. It won a communications award that year. And is the single best book I've ever read on these issues of how media tell these international stories. Islamic Peril, Media and Global Violence. So if the story of the conflict between Palestinians and Israel is a story, and I think we would all agree here, it's a story of violence. There is violence here. How do the media frame violence? Well, Karim tells us that they frame it in a very specific way. He divides the world into the north and south. It's not a geographical division. The north represents the richer nations, who, many of whom are former colonial powers. The south represents poorer nations, most of whom were subject to colonial rule. So northern journalists generally use the term violence narrowly to refer to actual physical violence carried out by terrorist villains. And here's a quote from Karim's book. Mainstream journalists help sustain consensus on the moral order that supports the status quo by portraying state agents, police, soldiers, etc., as heroes who apply force in the cause of national security. Terrorists are portrayed as villains who use it to destroy life and property, and citizens as victims whose security is maintained by state agents and threatened by terrorists. So that's the frame. Thus, state violence, such as Israel's routine use of military force against Palestinians, is not framed as terrorism. It may be reported as violence, but inherently it is framed as a legitimate defense of state interests. And here is where for me, it gets really interesting. Because Karim quotes the peace scholar, Johann Galtung, on the differences between physical violence and what they call structural violence, what Galtung calls structural violence, okay? So the mainstream media focus on physical violence. And if it is, say, rockets being lobbed from Gaza into Israel, this is a threat to the beleaguered Jewish state and is violence that is illegitimate. Israel's response is in defense, right? So that's the overall frame. That's violence. And I think we would all agree that is physical violence that's happening there. But what about structural violence? And here's a quote from Karim's book. Johann Galtung, a renowned scholar of peace studies, provides useful analytical concepts to study violence. He offers the notion of structural violence manifested in the denial of basic needs, i.e. poverty, human rights, repression, and higher needs, alienation, as distinct from direct or classical violence. thus allowing for the placing of violent actions within a larger framework that takes into account historical and social situations from which they arise. Consequences of systemic institutional behavior that does not involve direct physical force, but that nevertheless leads to alienation, deprival, disability, or death, as under, say, poor working conditions, is not usually described as violent in dominant political discourses. However, direct forceful reactions to such structural violence are invariably called violent. As no immediate violent causes can be uncovered for such reactions within dominant conceptualizations of violence, they are often described as being irrational. So the victims of oppression, the victims of poverty and the systematic denial of human rights, when they respond with physical violence, that is reported, but the structural violence itself is not seen as violence. And so the frame excludes the context, I would say the colonial, imperialistic context of this violence. And okay, when the frame excludes that time after time after time, when it refuses to define violence in the broader terms, the Canadian public, attending to these media, comes to see the Palestinians as violent, as perpetrators of terrorism, killing innocent women and children. And the structural violence that is perpetrated against them is not reported as violence at all. So framing is crucial in understanding the kind of story we get. As a journalist, if you start to perhaps talk to your editors about, well, this is violence too, they say, well, not really, it's not violent. It may be exploitation or something, but it's not violence. Violence is much more narrowly framed in the mainstream media. And that's important for understanding why we get the kind of silencing we get. Format is crucial. Format. Just picture yourself as a journalist. You're a radio journalist, lucky you. And you've got now a minute and 10 seconds or a minute and 30 seconds to tell a complex story with clips and sound. Okay? You're a TV journalist and you've typically got 2 minutes. Print stories are generally now about 600 words. So, what are you going to put in to your story? You're going to have to put in just the very latest developments, and you're not going to have room for any historical context. Sometimes you write it in, but that's the first thing that's deleted when you run out of time. And so I would argue, just as with Ipperwash and the native peoples, the context of the Palestinian-Israeli conflict is vital for understanding the roots of it, for understanding what is happening today. But that historical context, a scholar in the States named Lance Bennett calls it fragmented news, because news is about story, and the story is about what is happening now, not 50 years ago. That's irrelevant, even though we know that it is highly relevant in understanding the context of the situation today. But format excludes it because of brevity and because journalists are biased in favor of the latest and what is happening now. That's what news is. It has to be new. That's the idea. New, novel. Focus. As a journalist, you will employ the tool of focus. They actually teach focus at CBC. The formula for it is a person or people doing something for a reason. So Israel is assassinating certain leaders, certain Palestinian leaders, because they're trying to defend the state from Palestinian violence, say. That is a focus statement, right? Focus, the tool of focus, focuses on the immediate, what is happening now, the most dramatic things, the personalities, and it frequently ends up quoting people in power because they provide the framing. The Prime Minister of Israel, the Prime Minister of Canada, the President of the United States appear in the news soap opera, I call it, because they're regular characters, and they appear almost daily, and they get to set the terms of the frame, and we know where they're coming from on this story, and they get to, in terms of the focus, they're the personalities that we focus on, and much more rarely, although sometimes they will appear, there will be Palestinian spokespeople, but never given the same kind of frequency as the President of the United States, who has a tremendous PR office behind him. And finally, Flack. This comes from Noam Chomsky's propaganda model, and Dr. Thompson was talking about it. The news media are subject to flack and are very sensitive to it, because if you become the center of attention, as Neil MacDonald did, for instance, a CBC reporter that Izzy Asper singled out as an enemy of Israel, as anti-Semitic, then you're in a very uncomfortable spot. Your news organization may or may not defend you. And so it's very important to be careful what you say. These are controversial issues. And in any case, we all know what the proper frame is. We know how the format and focus work. So we don't need to get ourselves into too much trouble and generate a lot of flack and a lot of heat. So flack is a very effective feedback mechanism. And journalists say, oh, we're going to hear about this one. Oh, Jesus. And they tend to soften things up. Upton Sinclair once wrote on how difficult it is to get someone to understand something when his salary depends on not understanding it. And so when you talk to journalists, and you say, well, you know, this is oppression. They will go back to the frame, and most of them legitimately do accept that frame. They themselves are also victims of the propaganda that is repeated endlessly. And because they're not really oriented to historical background, they may not know it, and so tend to repeat the messages of the powerful and the frame of the government of Canada. And the last thing I'll say is that it's important to know that in foreign reporting, it's quite rare for any reports to appear that are not in accord with the official stance of the national government. And this is the way it is. Canada is framed as a peaceable kingdom, as a very lovely democracy. We're all lovely people, we tell ourselves, and we're peace brokers, and we want peace everywhere, and we're doing our utmost to find it. And so when our government condemns Palestinians or condemns Iran as a tremendous foe of Israel and perhaps going to wipe Israel off the map, when our government does that, the media faithfully fall in line because it fits the frame. I can think of very few examples where this is not so, where the media go in one direction and the government of Canada goes in another. Noam Chomsky's famous study of the discrepancy in coverage of Cambodia and East Timor. Cambodia, the Khmer Rouge, a communist government which committed terrible genocide against its own people, that received extensive coverage in the mainstream Western media. At the same time as the genocide was happening in East Timor, and it received almost no coverage at all. Well, Indonesia was behind that genocide. Indonesia was a friend of Canada and the United States. and an official ally of ours. And so no media will really thought twice about reporting that, whereas the Cambodian thing, the officials in Ottawa and in Washington were speaking about that all the time, just as they speak now about Syria, and very little about Bahrain. And so the media tends, the coverage tends to follow the national line. Not because journalists say, well, we've got to follow what the government is saying, but because it's a kind of tradition. And only when there is significant dissent, if the leader of the opposition in Ottawa spoke up on Israel's on the Palestinians' behalf, that would then open a space for the media to report another way, another frame. So if there are any questions later, I'd be happy to answer them. Thank you.